But in all this time, in the 2 years of him sick, he don't bring it up. And for sure I don't say nothing about it. When Campbell don't come back, Lavinia takes over with Suki like she's her own. You never see one without the other. One day Lavinia tells me to ask the captain about her brother, Cardigan. So I do. The captain don't know what happened to the boy after he sold him away, but he's thinking that maybe Cardigan got took up north. He did remember that when Cardigan went off with the man, Lavinia screamed so bad that she hurt his ears. When I tell this to Lavinia, she starts to cry. So I tell her not to worry, that I'm always going to take care of her. I say I know what it's like to be on your own. The only problem I got is Ben's woman, Lucy, who don't like me. She's a big girl, shy with everybody, but always giving me the up and down. She knows that Ben still has his eye on me, and she knows that I got my eye on him. Truth is, I'm still wanting him like nobody else. But he jumped the broom with Lucy, and that be that. At least most days, that's what I tell myself. Will Stevens is running this place real good, and everybody's happy the way things are going. When Will Stevens looks at me, I know he likes what he sees. Me too. He's a good-looking man. Not like Benny. Oh, no. But he's all man, just the same. We talk, laugh, and sometimes with Mama and Papa, we sit out at night. When I'm talking and laughing with Will, it makes Ben real mad. One day Ben shows up when I'm feeding the chickens.
What you doing with that man?
He asks. What you doing with Lucy? I say. Ben's eyes get so hot I laugh, then walk away, moving slow so he can see what he's missing. 2 years we go on this way. The thing is, the more time goes on, the better it is for me. I'm already 23 years old, and soon I'll be getting too old for the captain to find me a husband.
Chapter 23, 1796, Lavinia. In May 1796, the twins and I celebrated our 12th birthday. We were given an afternoon free of chores and skipped away with glee, carrying between us the picnic basket that Belle had prepared. We chattered non-stop along the way until we reached the woods, where Fanny determined we would eat. She was the tallest of us and always famished. Quick-witted, Fanny was as plain-looking as she was plain-speaking, and she often needed reminding to attend to her appearance. Of a sharp nature, she observed out loud what most dared not think, and there were times her unsolicited remarks caused shocked silence, only to be followed by uproarious laughter. Unlike her twin, Beatty seemed destined to be a beauty. She was soft-spoken and kind, and when she smiled, her deep facial dimples appeared as though to punctuate her easy disposition. Beatty was clean and careful in her dress, and she loved pretty things. Sewing and embroidery were her passions, and her clothes always had adornment. Nothing excited Beatty more than taking the scraps of discarded fabric Mama brought from the big house and fashioning the colorful cloth onto her clothing as collars and pockets. I stood between the twins in size. I was slight and thin, but not as tall as Fanny. I suspected I was rather plain, although no one told me so. My fire-red hair was darkening to auburn, and I wore it in long braids. Fanny teased me about the freckles spattered across my nose until Mama put a stop to that. With the security of the past 2 years, I had become more sure of myself and was certainly more outgoing. Yet an underlying anxiety always stayed with me. As a result, I was careful to please and quick to obey. Our days were filled with chores. Fanny helped out with the captain, while Beatty and I either worked with Belle in the kitchen or helped Mama up in the big house. My chores in the early morning included helping Mama with Miss Martha's personal care. Since Philadelphia, Miss Martha did not live in reality, But doses of laudanum kept her subdued, and I no longer feared her as I had on her return. In fact, I welcomed the times I sat with her to read aloud or card wool as she rested. In the late afternoon, if Miss Martha's mood suited, I brought Suki for a visit, for she elicited a vivid response. Miss Martha always brightened when she saw the child. As Suki cuddled close, the woman would read to her from a child's picture book. In an odd sing-song voice, she repeated the verses over and over until they both slept. One afternoon, Mama May glanced in to see them both asleep.
"That the only good rest that woman get," Mama whispered to me.
"But you never leave them alone together."
The captain couldn't seem to recover his health. In earlier days, he had been able to walk outdoors, but those excursions ceased as an increasing lethargy overtook him. Fanny and Uncle Jacob continued to care for him, but Fanny was his bright spot. The captain taught her to play card games, and on her winning days, she was rewarded with coins that she proudly gave to her mother for safekeeping. I can only imagine how Belle's nightly visits cheered her father. She took books from the big house library and read to him, often late into the night. I awoke one such night to hear Belle's voice coming up from the kitchen. Careful not to disturb Suki, I crept downstairs to find Belle at the table, studying opened books in the dim lamplight. She explained how she was going over the following night's reading. Unfamiliar with some of the words, she found them in a 2-volume dictionary, then sounded them out to herself as her grandmother had taught her to do. After that, on my request, she included me, and together we furthered our reading skills. That day in May, during our 12th birthday picnic, Fanny's and Beattie's and my talk turned to the church event on the upcoming weekend. A sacrament service was planned, which meant a whole day away from home, where attention would be given not only to prayer and sermon, but to food and socializing. The three of us spoke glowingly of Will Stevens, whom we had to thank for all this. By making some humane changes, Will Stevens had won the goodwill of the people in the quarters. Under his supervision, the plantation not only thrived, but had exceeded production of past years. Food allowances were increased, and salt was added as a staple. Saturday afternoons and Sundays became free time, a time for people in the quarters to work in their gardens, hunt or fish, wash clothes, and visit. They also were given the choice of going to church on Sunday. Will Stevens had been raised to go to church, and every Sunday he hitched up a wagon inviting as many to ride as could, while others walked the hour's distance. I was beyond envy the first Sunday when I discovered that Beattie and Fanny, accompanied by Ben and Lucy, had been given permission to go with the group from the quarters. "But why?" I cried to Belle. "Why can't I go?"
"You don't belong with them," Belle tried to explain.
I still wonder at the fuss I must have raised that caused Will to intervene and speak to Belle on my behalf, but he did, and I couldn't believe my ears when I heard him say that if I could go, he would look out for me.
"Why don't you come too?" he asked Belle. "You could ride in the wagon."
"Thank you," she said, "but I got to stay here to do the cooking."
And so we rode off, the twins and I, that first Sunday morning. I was so happy to go that I did not question why I sat up front, next to Will Stevens, while the girls rode in the back of the wagon. This audiobook is continued on Disc 5. The church was rustic, a large log building with rough-hewn benches. It was in that house of worship that I first was made aware of the clear distinction that was made between the races. The white members were seated at the front, while in the back of the building, standing room was reserved for the black servants. I looked back for the twins when Will tucked my hand in the fold of his arm and led me to a pew. Beattie saw me first and hid a shy smile, but when Fanny saw me, she waved openly, causing Ben to pull her arm down. I paused, wanting to return to them, but Ben gave a nod for me to continue on with Will. Throughout the service, I felt the separation, and wondered if Belle had come, would she have been able to sit with Will and me? After the service, although other families stayed to socialize, our group left, excited to return home to share the experience with the others who had not come. Sunday services became routine. I was given permission to go with the twins and Will each time they went. I stopped wanting Belle to join us when I began to develop a liking for Will Stevens that soon, on my part, developed into young love. Will, likely aware of my infatuation, was teasing and playful with me. He called me solemn and seemed to take delight when he was able to make me smile. As time went on, our Sunday rides to and from church gave us room for more intimate conversation, and eventually he gained my trust. Then I became more talkative, and one day I asked him his age. Without hesitation, he informed me that he would be 23 years old this October. "Do you have a girl?" I asked, and his smile was so warm I wanted to touch his arm, though of course I didn't. "Why, no," he said. "Do you have anyone in mind?" "How about Belle?" I asked anxiously. He became serious. "She could never be my sweetheart," he said. Before I could ask why, he added, "We could never marry. You know that. It would be against the law." I hadn't known that, and didn't understand, but didn't want to appear young and ignorant, so I said nothing. "Do you have a beau?" he asked after a time. "Ben used to be my beau, but he got married," I said. "Oh," a smile curved his lips. "I could see why you would like Ben. He's a good man." Suddenly I felt bold. "You might want to wait for me," I said. "Until I grow up, I could be your girl."
"Will," he said. "Now there's an idea."
"I'm quite smart," I forged ahead, "and I know how to cook and read, and Suki is wild about me."
"And who is Suki?" he asked.
"She was Dory's baby, but when Dory died, Suki wanted me to be her mother." I gave a sigh and crossed my hands in my lap.
"Aren't you a little young for that?" he asked.
"I'm 12," I answered indignantly.
"Well, then, of course," he said.
"Belle says that I'll be a beauty one day." I looked to him for a reaction.
"I believe you already are," he said, and winked at me.
My face flamed, but I continued on. "Oh, and I know about raising chickens. I haven't killed one yet, but Mama says that day is coming soon." I shuddered, thinking of it. Will squared his shoulders before speaking.
"Let's see here," he said.
"A beauty who can read and kill chickens.
I think I might have to consider this proposal seriously."
"Are you teasing me?" I asked.
He flicked the reins and looked over at me with a beautiful smile. "Do I ever tease you?"
"All the time," I said, and we laughed. I suspected he thought of me as a child, but I didn't care. I was sure if I had anything to say on the matter, he would be my future husband.
"Abinya! Abinya!"
Fanny called me back to our picnic.
"What you thinking of?"
"Nothing," I said.
Beatty smiled at me.
"You thinking about Will?"
"Maybe," I said, returning her smile.
"You know Marshall coming home this week," Fanny offered.
I rolled over on my stomach, recalling the forlorn image of the lost boy riding out in the carriage. I wonder what he's like now.
"He only coming for 2 weeks, then he going back to study. The cap'n wanted to see how he doing," Fanny said.
During our picnic that day, Marshall did indeed arrive.
"He's so growed up, it hard to believe it the same boy,"
Mama told us. How right she was. Late in the afternoon, I was sent up to the big house to sit with Miss Martha while she slept. There, I was startled to find Marshall seated at a window in the mistress's room. Although forewarned, I scarcely recognized him. He rose when he saw me. Shy, I stood back. In his 16th year, he was already the height of a grown man.
"Hello, Lavinia," he said.
His childhood monotone voice had been replaced with a confident baritone. "Hello," I said, quietly.
"You've grown," he said,
looking me up and down, and for the first time ever, I was aware of my drab homespun clothes. In contrast, he wore navy knee breeches and a waistcoat made of ivory satin. On it was snitched a pictorial scene of vivid colors, and I immediately thought of Beatty and how she would be captivated at the detail of the embroidery.
"Join me,"
he invited, setting a chair next to his at the window. Uncertain what to do, but seeing his mother asleep, I did as he asked. He positioned himself with assurance, and I seated myself as I had been taught by Miss Martha, with my feet together and my hands folded in my lap. Marshall had grown into a strikingly attractive young man. His short blonde hair curled loosely at his neck, and his blue eyes, which in my memory had been dull, now shone when he smiled.
"I often remember you," he said,
then drained a glass of wine.
"You were the one who cared so for my baby brother."
He gazed out the window. The sun was setting, and a light cast his face in gold. I could hardly believe that he was speaking to me in this way, and I could not take my eyes from him.
"I understand that you are a great help to my mother," he said.
"I read to her," I said, proud of the achievement.
"Do you like to read?"
he asked. "It's my favorite thing."
"I must speak to Father about you," he said. "I wonder what plans have been made."
I was spared an answer when Mama abruptly came into the room. She studied us for a moment before addressing Marshall.
"You know the captain wanting to see you."
Marshall flushed. He stood and, with a look of defiance, went to the blue room. There he stopped at the side table that held a wine decanter. From it, he poured himself another glass of wine. He drank it in short order, then left the room. Mama shook her head.
"That boy drinking too much," she said.
I saw Marshall only in passing over the next few days, but each time he saw me he nodded, smiled, and greeted me by name. I was flattered by the attention from this sophisticated young man.
"Marshall drinking all the time,"
Mama said at supper that evening.
"I tell him not to ride out when he drinking like that,"
Papa agreed.
"But he go just the same every day." "Where he go?"
Mama asked.
"Folks over at the other place say he find Rankin again. Maybe Rankin find him, I don't know,"
Papa said.
"It good that boy leaving again in a few days."
"What gonna happen when the captain gone?"
Fanny asked.
"Will Marshall come back here to run this place? He be the master then?"
Belle answered quickly.
"The captain's gonna be just fine, Fanny. Every day he's getting stronger."
"Belle, you know he's sick. You best talk to him about getting those free papers of yours,"
Papa George said to Belle.
"I will, Papa," Belle said. "I'll get the papers, but I don't want him to get started up again about sending me off."
"You tell him you need those papers,"
Papa said firmly.
"I will. I will,"
Belle answered, her irritation clear. The Sunday of the anticipated sacrament service finally came, and the twins and I could barely contain our excitement. I had worked with Belle to prepare the feast we took with us for the communal picnic at the church grounds. We packed baskets of fresh biscuits and cornbread, pickled cucumbers, and peach preserves, and my favorite, a pound cake with thick strawberry jam for topping. Beside myself with excitement, I begged Belle to come along and bring Suki.
"Ben and Lucy are coming," I said as encouragement.
"Mama needs me to do the cooking for the big house," Belle said, "and I don't think I'm wanting to pray all day anyway."
She waved goodbye in the early morning light. She had rushed to help us get underway and hadn't taken the time to attend to her hair. Her thick braid hung down,
and when she raised her arm to wave us off, her shift dropped to expose a corner of her smooth, tanned shoulder. She pulled it back quickly and blushed with embarrassment. I did not miss the admiring look Will Stevens gave her, and because of it, I was happy that she could not come. I waved goodbye to her, but felt a strange sense of foreboding when I looked up toward the big house to see Marshall at a bedroom window, watching as our wagon rumbled away.
Chapter 24. Belle. I was in the kitchen, by myself, sweeping, and I don't hear nothing until I got a knife at my neck, and Rankin, in my ear, telling me if I make a noise, that knife's going in. Then Marshall, drunk like Rankin, comes at me. I start kicking, but Rankin twists my arm and punches my stomach. I start screaming, but Rankin takes off my head rag and stuffs it in my mouth. It's hard to breathe, and I'm choking on blood. But when I see what Marshall's gonna do next, I go wild. Then Rankin hits me, and I go down. All the time Marshall's working on me, he's talking. But I don't hear what he's saying. Rankin is talking too, but all I know is, I'm gonna die. I'm gonna die. When it's all over, when Marshall's buttoning up, Rankin moves that knife real slow across my chest, watching my face. You want me to cut these off? He says. Keep them for myself. My head flies back and forth, back and forth. I can't stop it. He says I tell anybody about this, he'll come back and cut them off. Then he's gonna kill anybody I talk to. Just like this, he says. He puts that knife up over me, then brings it down fast, right into the floor. Everything in me goes soft. They go, and I pull myself to a corner and stay put, just trying to breathe. I keep choking. I don't even know to take my head rag out of my mouth. When Uncle Jacob finds me, he tells me to hang on. He's going for Mama. Who do this? Mama asks, but I don't say nothing. Mama cleans me up and gives me some peach liquor. Then she asks me again, Belle, who do this? I'm sure those two are listening, so I don't say nothing. I know Rankin will do what he says. Papa say Rankin and Marshall drinking and up to no good. Was they here? Mama asks. I put my hand over her mouth quick to stop her. Mama pulls back, looks at me. Then she says that she's gonna go up and tell the captain. And that's when I start crying. No, Mama, no. I hang on to her like she's gonna leave me. No, Mama, no. Don't tell nobody. Hush, child. I don't do nothing you don't want me to do. She gives me another drink to stop my shaking. I say, don't tell nobody about this, Mama. Please don't tell nobody. Mama say, that's all right. I do just like you say, Belle. I drink some more, and the last thing I know is Mama's taking me up to bed.
Chapter 25. Lavinia. It had been a wonderfully long and enriching day. Driving home, we continued to sing hymns, repeating the songs sung earlier at the service. Lucy had surprised us all. She was a large, dark woman, not given to talk, but God had blessed her with a singing voice that caused others to stop and listen. We pleaded on the ride back until we convinced her to sing a solo. Splendor radiated as she sang, and it touched everyone in the wagon. At our first stop in the quarters, Ida and the other women climbed down from the wagon, and Ben hopped up to sit proudly next to Lucy. Will flicked the reins, and the horses walked on, stopping next at the kitchen house before their final stop at the barns. When the twins and I jumped off, We were surprised to see Papa seated at the rough pine bench outside the kitchen. He rose at our arrival and came to meet us. My eyes were accustomed to the nightlight, and I saw the worry on his face.
"Everything all right,"
he tried to reassure us.
"Everything all right."
"Papa?" Ben leaped from the wagon.
"Belle have some problems, but she gonna be all right,"
Papa said. Will came down to join the men.
"What happened here, George?"
Papa led the men a short distance away from the wagon before he spoke to them in a low voice. Their response to his quiet information was mutual. They gasped and turned their heads away from Papa. Ben faced the big house, and from the profile of the unscarred side of his face, I had never seen him look so angry. When he began to walk toward the kitchen door, Papa held him back.
"You take Lucy home," Papa said. "She don't need trouble with her baby coming."
As if on cue, Lucy came to stand beside Ben and tried to take his hand. He shook her off.
"Get back on that wagon,"
he said, then turned away, angrier still. Lucy didn't get back on the wagon. Instead, she walked off alone in the dark, heading toward her home down by the barns. Papa gave Ben a strong look until Ben followed after his wife. After Will left with the horses and wagon, Papa sent Beatty and Fanny up to the big house, where they were told they would spend the night together in the blue room. Mama was up there with Suki, waiting for them. They left together, walking hand in hand in the dark, and I was left alone with Papa. He looked down at me as though uncertain what to say.
"Papa, where's Belle?"
I could scarcely speak from fear.
"Mama coming soon,"
he answered.
"Papa,"
I said, hardly daring to ask,
"is Belle dead?"
"No, child," Papa said.
He led me to sit on a bench and seated himself next to me.
"Belle gonna be all right."
He looked off when he spoke.
"Belle have a bad day, that's all."
"What happened, Papa?"
"Some men show up. They drink him, and they hit on Belle."
"Where was Mama?"
I asked in alarm. Papa breathed in deeply.
"She and Suki was up with Miss Martha."
"Who were the men?"
"Belle don't want nobody talking about this,"
Papa said.
"But I want to know what happened,"
I said.
"She don't even want the captain to know,"
Papa said.
"Why, Papa?"
I asked angrily.
"Why won't she tell the captain?"
"Belle afraid that she gets sent away,"
Papa said flatly. When Mama came, she took Suki and me up to bed, cautioning us to be quiet. Belle was already asleep in our dark room, and soon after Mama left, Suki fell asleep. I stared into the night for a long while, too afraid to go to Belle, too afraid to go to sleep. The sun was already up when I woke the next morning to feel Suki's fingers gently outlining my face. I pretended sleep while she touched my eyes, then traced my eyebrows, tickling me. I smiled in spite of myself, then startled her by grabbing her hand. She fell against me laughing, and I hugged her to me, breathing in her delicious baby scent. When I heard the kitchen sounds of pots and pans, I remembered the night before and quickly lifted up on my elbow to check on Belle. Her bed was empty, and I was relieved to know she was downstairs preparing a morning meal. I stopped my play with Suki and rose to pull my long brown skirt over my night shift, then told Suki to wait until I came back.
"Belle?"
I called, leaning down midway on the stairs. Unbeknownst to me, Suki had followed and grabbed my skirt in play. Belle was working at the fireplace, and when I called, I startled her and she swung around. I cried out her name again when I saw her battered face. On seeing my horror, she tried a smile in an effort to soften the shock. It must have hurt her, for she grimaced and held her hand to her swollen mouth. I don't know when I first noticed her skirts in the embers, but when I saw they were smoldering,
Such was my alarm that I could not speak. Instead, I ran down the stairs, intending to pull her away from the fireplace. Unwittingly, as I ran, I pulled Suki, who with a cry tumbled down the stairs. When Suki began to scream, I froze, unsure which beloved to help first. I turned back to Suki for a moment, then saw Belle rush past me to the child, unaware that the back of her skirt had begun to flame. In shock, I was unable to move. To our good fortune, Will Stevens appeared. Within moments, he pulled Suki from Belle's arms and thrust the screaming child at me. He pushed Belle to the floor, stomped on her skirts, and called for me to bring the water bucket. I sat the shrieking Suki on a chair and ran for the bucket of drinking water. Will pulled it from me and threw the water on Belle to douse her skirts. She gasped when the cold water hit her legs.
"No more," she cried. "No more."
She rocked her head back and forth, and although her eyes were wide open, she wasn't seeing us. Will sat beside her on the dirt floor and placed her head against his shoulder.
"It's all right, Belle," he said. "It's over. Your skirts were on fire and we put it out. It's all right."
Suki continued to screech as I ran with her to get Mama. By the time Ben and Lucy's baby Junior was born, Belle, though appearing to have recovered from her physical trauma, remained moody and withdrawn. Curiously, there was no explanation. From adult whisperings, Fanny, Beatty, and I tried to piece together what little information we could, but later that fall, when Belle's stomach began to swell, we did not associate the event with Belle's pregnancy. When we were told that she was to have a baby, all three of us guessed Will was the father, as he had become a frequent visitor to the kitchen. I watched jealously at the concern he showed for Belle. I saw no physical contact between them, but in my young heart, I was convinced they were lovers. One day, unable to hold back, I asked Belle to name the father of her child.
"You know we don't talk about this," she said coldly.
I didn't respond, but after her refusal, I became increasingly petulant. When, later that month, my body made the transition to womanhood, I went to Mama May to have her teach me self-care during my monthly time. After the instructions, Mama sat me down in her small house.
"Why are you so mad with Belle?" she asked.
I shrugged.
"I hear you talking to her in ways that not right," she continued.
I hung my head.
"Womans get the bad feelings sometimes, and they don't know why. It all right if you don't know why you so mad with Belle, but I thinking it have something to do with Belle having a baby."
I stayed silent.
"Belle have no say about this baby. It for us to help her now. She needin' you, just like Suki needin' you."
Mama pulled me to her and stroked my back.
"I know you a good girl, Abinya. That day you come here be a good day for us. Now you like Belle's own child. That never change. For you growing up, and this be a time she needin' you."
She reached down for my face and held it up.
"Belle needin' every one of us," she said,
looking into my eyes.
"We her family, and we gonna help her. You part of this family?"
I yanked away and turned my back to her.
"Abinya," she said with disappointment. "You not with this family?"
"I don't know," I said, stomping my foot. "I don't know. Mostly it seems like I'm part of this family, but in church I have to go up front and sit with the white people. I want to sit with the twins, and they can't come up with me, and I can't go back by them. You aren't my real mama, and Belle isn't either. Where will I go when I grow up? And I don't want to live in a big house either."
I began to cry, and Mama waited a while before she spoke.
"Abinya," she said. "If you and Beatty and Fanny was playing in the stream, and it got deep, like after the big rain, and you all needin' help, don't you think I there to help you out just like I do the twins?"
I thought about that for a moment. "But which one of us would you pull out first?"
I asked, turning to face her.
"Whoever go by me first," Mama said quickly.
We stared at each other, then laughed aloud at her honest answer.
"Lavinia," she said.
"This I know. What the color is, who the daddy be, who the mama is, don't mean nothing. We a family, caring for each other. Family make us strong in times of trouble. We all stick together, help each other out. That the real meaning of family. When you grow up, you take that family feeling with you."
"But I don't want to go away," I started.
Mama interrupted.
"Why are you thinking about leaving now? That's some long time away. You look at today, child. You say, 'Thank you, Lord, for everything you gives me today.' Then you worries about the next day when the next day come."
I sighed in relief.
"So, Obinya," Mama asked again, "you part of this family?"
I nodded. She smiled at me.
"Good. Then we best get back to work, 'cause we a working family."
She rose to her feet, and I, feeling like a woman, followed her out the door and into the bright sunlight. Through that fall and winter, Belle grew heavy and awkward. Remembering Mama's words, I tried to help her whenever she would allow. She remained temperamental, but we were close again, although neither of us spoke of the baby she was carrying. Fanny told Beatty and me that when the captain finally noticed Belle's condition, he became furious and demanded to know who the father was. Belle refused to discuss the subject and told him that she would not visit him if he were to ask again. He became enraged and told her to stay away, and so she did. I was in the kitchen house with Belle and Mama on a cold February night when Belle's baby was born. The twins were up at the big house, and Papa came for Suki when Belle's labor pains began in earnest. I wanted to go with Papa, but Belle clung to my hand and asked me not to leave. I looked at Mama, hoping she might send me off with Suki.
"Obinya gonna stay?" Mama set me with her eyes. "Obinya can almost do this by herself," she reassured Belle. "You remember how she helped me when Campbell come?"
This time I was older and more prepared for childbirth, but I felt sick with relief when Belle finally delivered herself of the child. Mama had me cut the purple cord, and after she cleaned and wrapped the child, she handed the baby to me.
"Give him to Belle," she instructed.
I stared at the baby.
"Go on,"
Mama pushed me toward Belle.
"Belle," I cried in delight. "Belle, he looks just like Campbell."
Belle gave a sharp cry and turned her head away. Her reaction reminded me of Miss Martha's rejection of Campbell, and I felt afraid for Belle's baby. I looked to Mama for guidance and was surprised to see her drying her own tears. I waited, unsure, until the baby began to fuss. Mama came.
"Belle," she said, taking the baby from me. "Come now. He your baby. This child come from the Lord. He got the right to have a mama, and that mama is you. Now you take him, Belle, and you give him your milk. He a good baby. He gonna be a sweet child."
Belle lay with her head turned away, but Mama pulled back Belle's nightshirt to expose a full breast. Mama settled the baby next to Belle. As he hungrily sought a nipple and began to suckle, Belle gave a low moan when her body yielded to the need of her child. Her anguished eyes sought out Mama, but they softened the moment she looked down at her nursing baby. She cradled him and made soft cooing sounds as she stroked his tiny, white face. I shed tears of relief and joy. Belle reached for my hand and pulled me toward her and the baby.
"Lavinia," she whispered. "What are we gonna call him?"
Chapter 26. Belle. At the end of May, 1797, the captain calls for me to bring my baby Jamie Pike up to the big house. First I say no, but Mama says, "Belle, you got to go. That man's getting sick about the day.
He can't hardly walk no more, and his color look like a dry old peach. You got to get the free papers for you and Jamie. If the captain die, what you gonna do? Stay here if Marshall takes the captain's place? You want that? First time ever I know I got to get the papers. So I go to the big house and take my four-month-old baby with me. Mama's right. When I see the captain, I see he's not gonna make it. My legs don't want to move, but I take Jamie over to show the captain. He just stares down. He asks me one more time who's the daddy, but my mouth won't work. Uncle Jacob, looking like he can't take no more, steps up.
It plain to see who the daddy be, Uncle says. And Belle don't have no say in the matter, and this a fact.
The captain looks like he's having trouble getting air. When he talks again, he says he'll give the free papers to Jamie, but then I got to go to Philadelphia. I say, all right, I'll go. But I tell him I'm still needing my own papers, too. He's thinking I have them, but I say no, I never do get them.
Come back in the morning, he says. I'll have the lawyer here and the papers drawn up.
Then last night, Mama comes running for Ben to get the doctor. But the captain's gone before they get back. I don't have time for crying, only time for wondering what's going to happen now. Mama's right. Now Marshall's going to be the master. I got to get me and Jamie out of here. I don't know where I'm going. I just know that I got to get out before Marshall's heading back. When everybody's working up at the big house, getting ready to bury the captain, I take the best knife in my kitchen house, wrap it good, then get busy and tie up everything I can carry. Tonight I'm going to take Jamie and run. First I'm thinking to take Lavinia, but I know that she won't go without Suki. I wait until nobody's around. Then I run down to hide my pack behind the spring house. I don't see Ben following me. When he comes around the corner, he scares me so bad I start hitting him. He holds me back, but that makes me hit him more.
Don't, baby. Don't hit me, he says.
And I say, don't you call me no baby. But he says,
Belle, you always my baby. Don't you know that? I take care of you like you my own.
Then I get mad. My mouth won't stop. You take care of me. When do you do that? That time Rankin and his men was throwing me around in the kitchen? Oh, I guess you was taking care of me when Rankin was holding me down and Marshall was on me. Or, no. No, that's right. You was taking care of me every night when you was on your Lucy. Ben lets go of me. He looks at me, and his big eyes tell me the words I use are cutting in. He backs away from me, holding up his hands to stop my talking.
You're right, he says. You're right.
When he starts to cry, all the fight goes out of me. Oh, Benny, I say, I'm just saying words. They're not the truth. But he keeps shaking his head, saying,
no, no, you're right, Belle. I don't help you. I never do help you.
I go to Ben, take my skirt, and clean away the water coming from his eyes. But he can't stop crying. I'm sorry, Benny, I say. I'm sorry for saying all that. I touch his mouth with my finger. Shh, I say. Shh. He moans deep and loud, and he pulls me to him. When we start to kiss, we both don't care to stop no more. That night, I get with Ben again. He tells me to stay until we see what Will Stevens has to say. Ben says he's going to run with me if Marshall's coming back.
Chapter 27. Lavinia. The captain was buried before Miss Martha's sister and her husband arrived from Williamsburg. In view of Miss Martha's condition, the doctor took it upon himself to decide on a fast and simple burial service. Only a few carriages arrived from other places, but all of us from the plantation were there. All, that is, but Miss Martha and Marshall, who, for reasons unknown to me, remained in Williamsburg. After Mr. and Mrs. Madden arrived, there followed a busy week. When Miss Sarah came to her sister's room, she often found me attending to Miss Martha. I remembered her from her Christmas visit, and my first opinion was not much changed. It continued to astound me to see how different she was from her sister. Though under these circumstances she was solemn, her eyes were lively and quick. Miss Sarah's face was plump, as was her body, but I was to learn that her soft appearance belied her determination. As she took charge, she left no doubt that she was indeed capable of overseeing a household. In the first few days, she said little, as she observed us in our daily care of Miss Martha. Then one day she addressed me. "Marshall told me how good you are to his mother. Now I see for myself how she relies on you." "She likes me to read to her," I said.
"And who taught you to read?" she asked.
I intuitively knew not to include Belle. "Miss Martha," I said, "before she got so sick."
"And would you like to continue to learn?" she asked kindly.
"Oh, yes," I said innocently. Later in the week, she asked for my help as she sorted through her sister's clothes. I indicated Miss Martha's favorite dresses and also the shoes she preferred, pointing out those that pinched her toes. Somehow I did not guess that we were packing for an upcoming departure. Mr. Madden, a lawyer, was executor of his brother-in-law's will. Papa George and Will Stevens met frequently with Mr. Madden, and finally, on Friday, all of the big house people were called to the library. Mr. Madden spoke first. Master Marshall, he said, had inherited the plantation and all that went with it. However, it was the captain's wish that Mr. Madden maintain control until Marshall's 22nd birthday. That, he informed us, would be 5 years hence. Meanwhile, Master Marshall was to continue his studies in Williamsburg, where he planned to attend the College of William and Mary to study law. The house and farm staff would maintain the property until Master Marshall's return. Will Stevens, now the farm manager, would be in charge. When Miss Sarah spoke next, she told us that Miss Martha was returning with them to Williamsburg. There she would be admitted to a noted hospital, where patients with disorders such as Miss Martha's were often treated successfully. Miss Sarah felt certain they could help her sister. Also, Miss Martha would benefit from being near her son in Williamsburg. I was surprised, then alarmed, when I was asked to stay after the meeting ended. I nervously looked back at Mama and Belle as they left. Belle looked as though she was about to cry, but Mama gave me a reassuring nod. Mr. Madden, as rotund as his wife, sat at the desk and peered through his eyeglasses at the papers before him. After the room had cleared, Miss Sarah coughed to get her husband's attention. He looked up.
"Yo,"
he said, as though surprised to see me.
"So you're Lavinia. I've been looking at your papers. Apparently, you'll be coming with us."
I must have shown my shock, for Miss Sarah took my hand and sat me in a chair. Then I connected Mr. Madden's words to the conversation I had overheard some nights before. That evening I woke to the sound of Belle's voice from downstairs. I glanced over to check on baby James, who was sleeping soundly in the sturdy cradle Papa George had made for him. Suki was asleep beside me, and I leaned over to kiss her round face as I got up. Before I reached the bottom step, I saw the kitchen door standing open. For some reason, I stopped when I heard Mama's voice coming from the outdoors. It was the end of May, and the evening was warm. I thought how pleasant it must be for her and Belle to sit and enjoy the night air.
"But what if she don't want to go?" Belle said.
"This a good chance for her,"
Mama said. It was Will's voice I heard next.
It's quite an opportunity, Belle. They are good people, and they will give her an education.
In a flood of anger on hearing Will's voice, I rushed back up the stairs. It remained my belief that Will was the father of Belle's baby, and I could hardly keep my jealousy contained. But this was the first time I had heard them together at night, and my anger burned so fiercely that I lost interest in their conversation. Now, in the library with the Maddens, I understood that they had been speaking of me. Lavinia, Miss Sarah took the paper from her husband. You are already 13 years of age, and in light of the fact that you have only a few years left to serve this household, we've decided to take you with us. I nodded, although I knew little of my indentureship. Nothing specific had ever been laid out for me, and the truth was, I hadn't thought to ask for a better definition.
I have watched you with Miss Martha, and I see how she cares for you.
I nodded again, numbed by my fear.
We want you to come with us to Williamsburg. When Miss Martha is well again, you will serve her. Until then, you will live with us. We have agreed, she said, glancing back for her husband's approval, that you can study with the tutor who comes to teach our daughter.
I was silent.
We are prepared to bring you to our home to give you every advantage for your future.
The roaring in my ears prevented me from hearing further, and eventually Miss Sarah sent me upstairs to resume my duties. Beatty waited there, and from the way she observed me, I guessed she already knew of my upcoming departure. My feelings of betrayal were so acute that I refused to speak to her or to anyone else for the rest of that day. I planned to avoid everyone until I had to leave. I became angrier still the following day when Mama had me sit with Miss Martha for much of the morning, then late into the afternoon. Fanny was caring for the needs of Mr. Madden and Miss Sarah, while Beatty and Mama were curiously absent from the big house. Uncle Jacob came to see me while Miss Martha slept, but I refused to speak to him.
"Allah be with you," he said,
after I shrugged his comforting hand off of my shoulder. When he left, I kicked out at the air, furious with him and his Allah. After Miss Martha finished an early supper, Miss Sarah came and gave me a small leather trunk, instructing me to take it to the kitchen house and pack my belongings. I knew that I had little to pack, and when I told her that I would not need a trunk of this size, she smiled and told me to take it anyway. The kitchen house was empty. Belle had not set out my usual supper, and that was almost more than I could bear. I believed then she had already forgotten me. Desolate, I went upstairs to pack, thumping the small trunk behind me. There, to my amazement, I saw two of Miss Martha's dresses draped across Belle's bed. As I approached to look more carefully, Fanny and Beatty jumped up.
"We help Mama get them ready for you,"
they shouted. Together they ran at me and began to undress me, insisting that I try on the new dresses. As they did so, they told me how Miss Sarah had given Mama two of Miss Martha's day dresses with instructions to cut them down for me. Fanny, closest to my size, had filled in for me, so I would have a surprise. After I stepped into the pale blue calico, Fanny fastened the front buttons, while Beatty pulled a folded blue ribbon from her pocket. She unfastened my braids and brushed free my long hair, then pulled some strands back from my face to tie them with the ribbon. They took my hands and, giggling, refused to tell me why they were leading me down to the quarters. A bonfire was roaring. Food was lined up on makeshift tables. A feast had been prepared. There was clapping when I appeared with the girls, and it was then I understood that the party was for me. Belle came first to hug me, then Mama and Papa, followed by Ben and Lucy. Finally, Ida, along with all the adults and children who had been my church companions, came over to wish me well. I looked around in wonder to think that so many cared for me. How could I bear to leave them? When the food was served, I was afraid to eat for fear of soiling my new dress. Ida recognized my dilemma, went to her cabin, and returned with a clean cloth that she carefully draped over my lap before handing me back my bowl. My eyes filled at her concern, and I longed for her to hold me, to tell me that a mistake had been made and I did not have to go away. All evening I fought tears. When the music began, Papa took me as his partner for the opening dance. As we circled, I looked out at the smiling faces and could not believe that I was leaving everyone in the morning. Then Will came to me for a dance. His thick, straight hair fell forward when he nodded, and he pushed it back before he reached for my hand. Beatty giggled, and Fanny poked me in the back as I rose to dance with him. While we danced, I refused his gaze, but he began to tease me, and it wasn't long before I laughingly sassed back. When the dance ended, Will returned me to Belle and the twins. "Don't forget, Lavinia," he said. "You said you'd be my girl. I'll be waiting for you." I turned away, angry at him for daring to joke like that in front of Belle. I was happy when Mama said it was time to leave. My family further surprised me when they all gathered at the kitchen house and each presented me with a gift. Ben gave me a small forged trivet in the shape of a bird. Mama had woven a basket. Inside was Beatty's contribution of 3 wild turkey quills. They had been boiled, their membranes stripped, the nibs pointed, and were ready for writing. Some black walnuts were included, and Belle gave me instructions on how to boil them down for ink. Fanny presented a small pouch that held 2 coins.
"Fanny get those from the cap'n," Beatty said proudly of her sister.
Belle gave me her prized silver hand mirror, and when I attempted to give it back, she insisted I take it, and asked me to think of her whenever I used it. Papa handed me a small wooden chick he had carved.
"You know what this mean," he said,
and I choked back tears remembering our long-ago conversation when he had told me that he would be my papa. Uncle Jacob gave me a whistle. It was a miniature made from a small reed, and when he had me blow it, it sang a high, wild note.
"That the call for me," he said. "If you got the trouble, you take that out and blow that. I listen good for that sound."
I don't know if it was the pitch of that whistle or his gentle words that touched me, but I could not stop the tears and leaned into Belle as I began to cry. She hugged me while Papa began good-natured teasing to bring me back. Everyone laughed when he told me that I'd better use the whistle carefully, because Uncle Jacob couldn't ride a horse very well. Papa drew mind pictures for us of Uncle riding to Williamsburg desperately hanging onto a horse while calling out that he was coming to save the day. It worked. I was laughing through my tears when everyone said goodnight. Belle helped me pack my trunk. There was room for everything but my collection of bird nests, so Belle suggested that I take only 2 and that she safeguard the rest. I reluctantly agreed, but I had little choice as my trunk was full the next morning when Ben carried it up to the big house and strapped it to the coach. Everyone came to see us off. At the last minute, Miss Martha decided she did not want to leave. After futile attempts at gentle persuasion, Mr. Madden commanded Ben to lift her up and deposit her into the carriage. I was the last to enter. The horses were eager to leave, and I was grateful for Ben's help when he assisted me up the carriage steps. He gave my hand a tight squeeze, but I dared not meet his eye. As the door closed, I saw Suki running up the hill from the kitchen house. I had talked to her early that morning and had explained that I was leaving for a while. She had listened carefully and appeared unperturbed as she went about her morning business. She must have been forgotten in the excitement, and now she came carrying her heavy winter shoes and her Moppet doll.
"Wait, Benny. I come in with you," she called. "I come in with you."
Before she could reach the carriage, Papa George scooped her up in his arms. We were off, but I couldn't keep myself from looking back out the window as the carriage pulled away. Suki was frantic, and Papa was having a hard time holding her as she kicked and hit, trying to break free. Inside the carriage, Miss Martha's screams spoke for me.
Chapter 28. Belle. I sure do miss Lavinia. After she goes, I find out how much I don't like being by myself. Nights are the worst.